So tonight, I guess we're going to be a little bit like adventurous in that what we're doing is something that like I came up with on my own. It's not, I mean, whatever, it's all the Mefarshim together, but it's not an article. It's not someone else's stuff. So I don't know how it's going to go, but I guess wish me luck. All right. So on Sunday or on Shabbos, I had a Chumash open and I was just reading through and I stumbled upon like a question that I thought was a really good one, and that is, what do we do with the middle pasuk of our sources, right? Pasuk bet. There's a lot of information there, but what are we supposed to make with it? So before that, just to take a step back, Ariella is taking a course in Mechlala this year that actually Malki took when she was there, called Perek Lamed Zayin. It's just they spend the whole semester on one perek in Bereishis. And I kind of like wondered way back when Malki was taking it, like what could they possibly do for a whole year on or a whole semester on one perek? It just doesn't seem like you can possibly keep it going that long. But the truth is that really tonight I only want to focus in on half of a pasuk and maybe even less, and the amount of mefarshim and the amount of stuff that you can have on just those couple words is pretty amazing. So I guess it's not so crazy that they could spend that much time on one bit. So here we go. Vayeshev Yaakov Beretz Megurei Aviv Beretz Canaan. Yaakov stays in the land of his father in the land of Canaan. And again, this is just to tell us like that, although you could probably spend hours and hours just on that one pasuk. But basically, the take home is Yaakov is back. Yaakov spent a long time traveling, right? All of Parshat Vayetze, all of Parshat Vayishlach are Parshiot where Yaakov is in transit, Yaakov is in limbo, and here he's finally back in Canaan. And Rashi points out that really all he wanted was peace and quiet, right? Of course, with 12 children or 12 sons from young to old, the likelihood of that happening is pretty small, but he's just hoping for peace and quiet. He's felt he's suffered so much already. He just wants to be left alone. And then Pasuk Bet. Ela toldot Yaakov Yosef. Ben Shvasrei Shana Hayaroet Echabatzon. So these are the generations of Yaakov. Yosef is 17 years old, and he was shepherding et Echav, his brother's Batzon, with the tzon. Now there are parentheses there because I got interrupted while making the Mekoros. So my plan was to put in, I believe, the Chizkuni there, who points out that there's a problem with those words. Hayaro et echav batzon. He was shepherding his brother's batzon. It sounds like either he's shepherding his brothers, which obviously doesn't happen, or if it was he's shepherding with his brothers, it should be not batzon, but like hatzon, the cattle that they were working together on the cattle. So I believe the Chizkuni says that what actually is happening here is he's overseeing them, right? He is 17 years old, and yet he is the one that is the foreman, and his older brothers are the ones that are doing all the heavy lifting. Now,
We are shepherding them.
He, right. Correct. But right, which anyway, like if this pasuk certainly is beginning to explain to us the dynamic and the animosity that exists between the brothers. So this would be the first thing, especially if you accept Rabbi Shalom's point that we did years ago, that the difference in age in the brothers is actually quite large. And Reuven was born perhaps years and years and years before Yosef, not 6 years before. So now you're talking about Reuven and Shimon and Levi and Yehuda, who are possibly in their 40s already, are being bossed around by some 17-year-old. That's a very hard one. And this is also another hard one. Nar is usually a noun, right? We very rarely use it as a verb, and yet here we're told, and he was a nar, he narred, whatever that means. He was a teenager with the Bnei Bilhah, the Bnei Zilpah, Neshe Aviv, who are the wives of his father. And Yosef brings he brings back all the bad, you know, tidings to his father. And Yisrael loved Yosef from all of his sons because he was the ben zikunim, and he made him a ketonet pasim. Okay, that's a lot to unpack. Any questions? Okay, good. So why is he only Nar with Bnei Bilha, Bnei Zilpa? Why is he not a Nar with everyone? Okay, good question, Greg. What else?
Presuming the age difference is as you described, there's no reason to say otherwise. But now, so if Yosef is nominally in charge, this didn't happen overnight. So, when Reuven was 30 and Yosef was 7, what was going on that Yosef sort of went to this position of being in charge?
Okay, yeah, that's a good question. What were the dynamics before he came out on the scene? And was it that it's possible that he was, at a certain point in time, he was like, the brothers were like, this is fine. We're doing great. We don't need him, right? Okay, yeah, good point. Any other questions?
I guess the last one is why are we switching now from Yaakov to Israel?
Okay, good. Why are we switching from Yaakov to Yisrael? Excellent. Okay, so...
Wait.
Yeah?
One question?
Sure.
In the pasuk about the fact that Yisrael, Yosef, et cetera, it's like out of nowhere. It's not really in... I don't think it's really in context with anything there.
Yeah, I mean, the only connection you can make is Vayave Yosef Dibatam Ra'alaviyam, that Yosef brought, like, the Lashon Hara or whatever back to his father, and then V'Yisrael Ahavet Yosef, and Yisrael loved Yosef. So did Yisrael love Yosef because he was a tattletale? Did Yisrael love Yosef because Yosef was not doing any of these things that his other brothers were doing? Right? It's a good question. Like, what's the connection? It, certainly the Ketonet Pasim, like, all of that just seems... To be like this standalone idea. Okay, good. All right, so I guess...
The possibility that your reports are only about the village of his sons, not the... brothers.
Say that one more time. I didn't catch it.
The way it works, the way it reads is that he's actually sending reports back of just the sons of Bilha and Zilpah.
Right, it could be, right? The Ramban, we're actually going to see that inside afterwards... says that, which seems to like run contradictory to everything we know, because we're used to that it's right. You read the pasuk, he was with his brothers in the field, meaning all the brothers, kama, but his affinity was towards the bnei Bilha and the bnei Zilpa, the wives of his father, kama, and Yosef brought back all this stuff to his father about them. Who's them? Hayaro et echav batzon. It would seem to be that, we read it that it's the other brothers, because how could he do that to the Bnei Bilha and the Bnei Zilpa? But we'll see that that's perhaps not the case. Okay, excellent. It's a good read. Okay, so my three questions that I want to deal with are, how are we supposed to understand vuhunar? What does that mean? Second one is, what exactly is the purpose of telling us about Bnei Bilha, Bnei Zilpa? And also, why is, just on that, why are they specifically called Neshei Aviv, the wives of his father, right? Why does that have to tell us that? We know that, right? Is there anything significant to that? And the third part is, this Lashon Hara that's being spoken, right? Who and what is it? So those are the three questions. So let's start with Rashi, which is probably what we're most familiar with. And this is the picture that we usually go into this week's Parsha with. V'hu nar. Shaya ose ma'ase narut. That he was immature. He acted like a teenager. Mitakim b'saro. He would do his hair. Memashmesh be'inav. He would, you know, look at his eyes. Kedei sheyehei nir'eh yafeh. He wanted to look good, right? So this is, you know, Rashi's picture is your typical teenager, right? Passes by the glass window. Every hair is just in place, right? He looks good. At B'nai Bilha, now, according to this, right, it's according to, we'll see according to Rashi, it seems like Vunar is its own standalone thing. Right? He made sure he looked good. What's B'nai Bilha? Why does it tell us B'nai Bilha, B'nai Zilpa? Ragil Eitzel B'nai Bilha, Lefei Shayu Echav Mevazino Tam V'hu Mekarvan. According to Rashi, the reason why he did that was because he spent a lot of time with the B'nai Bilha, because his brothers made fun of them, V'hu Mekarvan, and he would bring them close. Now, what indication in the Pasuk is there that the brothers made fun of them? Anybody have any idea? What, right? Where does Rashi get that from, right? The Tanhuma. Where does the Medrash get that from in those words? So the Tanhuma, this is at least what I remember seeing somewhere. Ebnei Bilha, Ebnei Zilpa would be enough, right? Vuhunar, he was, whatever that was, he as a youth, he hung out with Ebnei Bilha, Ebnei Zilpa. It doesn't need to tell us that they're Neshe Aviv, right? That we don't gain anything from that. We know that they're the wives of his father. So why does it add that in? So perhaps the Tanhuma is bothered by that. Right? Why is it there? Because what was it that the brothers said to the B'nai Bilha and the B'nai Zilpa? You're not really dad's kids. Your mothers are definitely not really wives of our father. Right? You're just B'nai Ashfachos. You're the servants' kids. And what happens? Comes along Yosef and says, no, it's all right. You're Neshe Aviv. Our dad is really your father, your mothers are really his wives, and therefore you're really like a whole member of the family. So that's where Rashi's coming from. What's dibatam ra'ah? Kol ra'ah sheyaro'eh be'achav b'nei le'ah haya magid l'aviv. And this is exactly how we read it, right? This is how we're used to it, that all the bad things that the brothers did, he took back to his father. Shayu ochlem eiver min achai, that they would eat a live limb from an animal. Right, and that they would mock and make fun of the Bnei Ashvachu to call them slaves, and they perhaps were involved in questionable relationships with women. That's what they did. Now we're told that that's true, but that what they did actually was somewhat similar to that, but they didn't actually do aveiros. Like let's say. They'd shecht them an animal and the mother would have a baby in its womb. The halacha is that you're allowed to eat that. You don't have to shecht that animal. It's like I've always had a hard time with that, right? Like, obviously you're not eating the animal raw, I would assume. But like, if, I don't know, your favorite cow is shechted, and when you shecht the cow, you find inside it a baby calf. So you could just put that baby calf straight in the oven as is. I mean, I guess maybe you could shoot it in its head also, and you wouldn't have to worry about kashrus issues. I'm not really sure. But yeah, so that they would actually do that, perhaps even cutting off the limbs from the live animal. They didn't do anything wrong. It's technically kosher, but it looked like Eiver Min Achai, right? They called the servant, the Bnei Ashvachos, Avadim. Now, isn't it interesting that Rashi, right, in the very pasuk that they're called Neshei Aviv, he refers to them as the Bnei Ashvachot. They're called slaves, right? So that's Rashi. So let's take a look at Ktav v'Kabbalah. Tamosha ya Yosef. Yeah?
I just think that's how the Bnei Leah referred to them.
Right. So, you know, that opens up a whole question of which we're not fully going to do tonight, but it is a good question. Like, the Bnei Ashvachot, like, okay, where... yes, that's how the Bnei Leah felt. How did Yaakov feel about the Bnei Ashvachot? Right? Meaning, like, we don't know a lot about them, but what have we seen about them? Like, is there any indication to see that Yaakov treats them the same as the Bnei Leah and the Bnei Rachel?
I mean, not now, only by the end, when he he's given the brachos. They're right up there with. I mean, he certainly doesn't differentiate among the various shvatim.
Right, that's true. Except I do believe that he and Moshe both give the brachot. If you look at them, I could be wrong. Let me double check that. I'm going to go back on Moshe because I'm not positive about that one. But let's see. Who does he give? When Yaakov gives the brachot, where do they come? Where do they get theirs? So Binyamin is the very last one. Actually, it's interesting. No, but there it's not. Yosef, yeah, you're right. It's if you look at them, Yosef and Binyamin are the last ones. You have the four of them in the middle. It's Dan, Gad, Asher, and Naphtali. Yep, I hear that. Okay, fine. So that's fair. Okay, so yeah, there it seems like he.
When Yaakov is on his deathbed, all of them are there.
Yeah, that's true. So what happens when Yaakov meets up with Esav? Right, you gotta put someone in front. True. So what happens? It's like the Bnei Ashvachot, and then who comes right behind them? Then the Bnei Leah, and then very last are the Bnei Rachel. So not exactly right. If you wanna think that your dad really loves you, when you meet your murderous uncle for the very first time, and you know that dad is terrified because he's coming with 400 men to greet you, and all of a sudden you're like, one of them's got to be first, right? And you're first. Like that's a rough one. But yeah. There's not enough to really spend time on, like really delving into it. But Nechama Price does have like a good analysis of it. And certainly there's an interesting dynamic that we'll explore just a little bit tonight, maybe scratch the surface on. Okay, Tava Kabbalah. Tamosha ya Yosef minaheg b'miyadat anava u'shfeilu u'sharet et b'nei bilha v'zilpa afshem b'nei ashvachut. So the Ketav Kabbalah says that when it says v'unar b'nei bilha v'bnei zilpa n'shei aviv, it means that he served over them. Right? He took care of them. Kol shekein shelo hitga'el achav b'nei agvira. And certainly he had no, there was no arrogance in how he dealt with the Bnei HaGavira, with the sons of Leah. The Odena was like Chalotoma word al hitro memuto lo haya here hure deyomi kim chalomot neviot. And his dreams that he had were not these daydreams of wow, I'm gonna be great, but rather they were nevua, right? There was a prophetic component that he wanted to be the leader, but he was not intending to, he didn't give off this air of arrogance leading over his brothers, both the Bnei Leah and the Bnei Bilhah and the Bnei Zilpah. Now, the Ketav HaKabbalah, it's a great answer. It just does not seem consistent with the actual psukim. But Yosef's attitude to the brothers is challenging, and the dreams and everything, it certainly is a tough one. Okay. So that's Ketav HaKabbalah. Now let's take a look at the Rashbam. So I think that the Rashbam, what he's about to say, if I'm understanding it correctly, and I did read it a lot because I was nervous that I got it wrong, but I'm pretty sure I got it right. So what the Rashbam is actually saying to me is mind-blowing. It's hard for me to imagine that this is really true, but this is what he says. He says, Naruto urgiloto umishtaav. Everything, the way he dealt with in his youth, his regular interactions, his chevra, were all with the Bnei Bilhah, Bnei Zilpah. Umitoch kach, hitchilu achi echav Bnei Leah lisnavoto. And because of that, the brothers, the Bnei Leah, began to hate him. So, according to the Rashbam, if I understand this correctly, what the Rashbam is basically saying is, if not for the fact that he spent time with the Bnei Bilhah and the Bnei Zilpah, all of this wouldn't have happened, right? They would not have hated him.
That sounds a little circular, meaning, he probably was hanging out with those who that weren't giving him so much trouble, but if the Bnei Leah weren't so endearing to him in the first place, You know what I mean?
Right. So that what the Rashbam is basically dealing with the fact. I mean, I guess the Rashbam on some level is saying, listen, let's look at the psukim objectively. There is nothing that we've learned or have seen that has indicated that there's any friction between the brothers. Right? We're starting. They just arrived in Canaan. The only thing we know is that Dina was abducted along the way, and Shimon and Levi come to her rescue. But there's no real, you know, indication that there's tension and friction between the brothers. So everybody else, you know, fills in the blanks and says, actually, there was an undercurrent of tension always. So now, with that undercurrent of tension that's existed throughout the whole thing, what happens next? Just want to tell you that look what happened, right? That, you know, that's where it's coming from. But the Rashbam is saying there's nothing. It just in a vacuum, if he hadn't hung out with the other kids, B'nai Leah would not have been jealous. I mean, I put it down because I think it's like it's a wild pshat, but I'm not sure that I can accept it as making sense.
That was all right. Maybe that was the first thing. But look at then you have three rapid fire things in a row. First of all, Naras B'nai Bilo, that's first. Then Vayosef is Yisamar L.A.B.M. Then Vistral, obviously, Yisamar Kalbanov and Vayosef is Pasim.
Right. So, yeah, so that's true. Meaning, like, according to the Rashbam, probably, even if not for, even if he hadn't hung out with the B'nai Bilo, B'nai Zilpa, the fact that he brought back bad tidings is that. That might have messed him up, and the Ketonet Pasim might have messed him up. And if all that didn't push him, the brothers over the top, then for sure the dreams would have done it. But at least the Rashbam is saying that the tip of the iceberg, what really started it all, was his interactions with B'nai Bilo and B'nai Zilpa by excluding them. All right.
Yeah. After Rachel dies, there is a tension there.
Right. Meaning we've spent the last 14 years assuming that the tension is real. Right. This it did not just happen one morning. That all of a sudden he's with the B'nai Bilo and the B'nai Zilpa. It must be that he doesn't like us. And then it all started like that. The undercurrent of tension that's, you know, clear from Reuven and the Dudaim and Reuven and Bilhah in the bed is all, you know, should be telling us this is systemic, and it's based on, it starts with Rachel and Leah and their tension, and it goes down to the kids. Okay, fine.
So how do you, I mean, I don't know if you need to, how do you get from that statement to some of the things that we just went over?
Yeah. So the Rashbam ends by saying, kol mine inyanim shegarmu lisnooto. We go through a lot of different things that lead to the hatred that was. But if you're looking for the point of departure, this is the point of departure. Again, it seems to me like there's probably more. It didn't just start here, but okay, that's the Rashbam. It's a very long Rashbam. It's uncharacteristically long. This is just a part of it. But yeah, it's a pretty famous one where he says, I just come to write pshat, and my grandfather Rashi thinks he writes pshat, but not so much. All right, let's end with the Ramban, which is also a very long one. There's actually most of the Mefarshim that speak, you know, that comment on the very beginning of Vayeshev are long. So this is a segment of the Ramban. The Ramban is bothered by a question. And if you learn the Ramban, one of the nice things of the Ramban is you always know when he's going to attack Rashi. Because what does he do? He starts by quoting Rashi. And then usually he'll you know, he's much more polite with how he deals with Rashi than how he deals with the Ibn Ezra. When he dismisses the Ibn Ezra, he often will talk about the Ibn Ezra in a way that seems uncharacteristic for someone who is, you know, the Ramban. But the way he writes about Rashi is, oh, you know, Rashi writes his butt. So he says, Rashi, you're telling us that what? He loved the Bnei Bilhah and the Bnei Zilpah. So he says, V'im kein, lama lo hitziluhu Bnei Ashvachot, v'hoev otam, u'karvan, u'magid la'aviv alachim b'vizyonam. If he took such good care of the Bnei Ashvachot, and he loved them, and he was mekarev them, and he told his father all the things that the other brothers did to degrade the Bnei Ashvachot, so why didn't they save him at the pit by Mechiras Yosef? Vim nomar, but I know what you're thinking. You're going to say sheyiru mina achim, that they were afraid of the other brothers. Hine heim dalid, therefore veruven imahem, there's Reuven with them. That's already five. Yosef atzmo, so it's five against five. Itigber yadam aleihem. They could overpower him, right? Meaning it would be a 6-on-5. And then even within that, you're assuming that Yisachar and Zvulun are the same of the same mind as Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda. I'm sorry, of Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda. Right? So it's possible that really in the end you'll have Yisachar and Zvulun neutral. You'll have six people, because Yosef himself is included in that, that will take on who? All they're taking on is Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda. So,
and Shimon and Levi kind of have outsized personalities, and as far as conflict goes, intimidating than the rest of them put together. But okay,
right? Which I think Shmuel would be why all the other Mefarshim are not bothered by this question. Meaning, well, the Ramban's question is a fair question. But you could just as easily say, like, I don't know, anybody that spent time in, like, with people, not even, like, children for sure, it's, you see it all the time. But you can be at, like, a meeting at work, and there's, like, 30 people in the room, and the CEO says something that's insane, or that's so mean, right? And what happens? Everybody's at the table, and what do? They do the eyes looking down thing, right? Nobody wants to, like, take on the CEO, even though they know what the person said is wrong or unethical or mean. Right? But at the end of the day, if you were to sit and ask everybody's going to walk out of the meeting and be like, I can't believe that he did that. So Shimon and Levi, Yehuda, right? Even though they might be outnumbered, it doesn't necessarily mean that they are, that anybody wants to actually take them on. So I think that's how you would answer why nobody else is bothered by this. And not only that, but we're told that everybody agreed to the Mechira Yosef. And according to the Bereshit Rabba, so he spoke diba on everybody. It was not just on the Bnei Leah. V'nachom be'inai, ki zakatu shav leva'er mashiz kir v'shil ro, Yosef unar ben shvasre shana yaroe betzon adecha v'bnei bilha b'nei zilpa, v'shei aviv v'dome lo b'seder izeh. He says, this is how I'd like to believe the psukim go. He goes, it's sort of like this. It's like, v'yachalmu chalom v'shneem ish chalomo b'layla echad ish kipidon chalomo ish kipitron chalomo, ha'mashkeh ve'ofeh asher l'melech mitzayim asher esur meitasor, shav l'faresh milat shneihem, asher hiskir v'shiro v'yachalmu chalom shneihem. That in that pasuk, there's a lot of stuff going on. V'yachalmu chalom shneihem, that each of them had a dream, ha'mashkeh ve'ofeh asher l'melech mitzayim asher esur meitasor, ish kipitron chalomo. When it says at the end, ish kipitron chalomo, it's saying that he explained each one. It's going back to the beginning. And that's why it says, I guess he's saying that the vehunar et b'nei bilha b'nei zilpa neshe aviv yomar ki hu hanar vehu im b'nei bilha b'nei zilpa neshe aviv tamid lo yiparei mehem. So he's saying that he was always with the b'nei zilpa, b'nei bilha b'nei zilpa, the b'nei zilpa, bavur naruto, right? V'unar b'nei bilha b'nei zilpa neshe aviv. It's going backwards. I think that's how it connects to the baker and the butler, that the same way there's like a lot going on and it's referring back to the beginning from the end. So it's the same thing here. when it says Vunar, what, why he was, oh, he was a nar and he was always with the Bnei Zilpah and Bnei Bila. Why? Ki lahem tziva vihem sheyishmeruhu vishartuhu lo livnei agivirot. So he says that what happened, his dad, their dad said to them that you have to hang out with Yosef, you have to hang out with Bnei Bila and Bnei Zilpah. Why? Because you're a nar and you need to be babysat by them. It's totally different, right? Like the Ketav Kabbalah, who said that he was in humility, he was serving over them. It's the exact opposite. They were serving over him. They were taking care of him. And who may be mayhem di bara alavim? Who did he speak lashon hara about to his father? He spoke lashon hara about the Bnei Bila and the Bnei Zilpah. And therefore, it was these four brothers who hate him. Right? He was the very first people to hate him were the Bnei Hashvachot. That, the Ramban says. The Ramban is telling us something that is definitely not what we're used to seeing. This is very much against the grain and certainly is different than anything that we know in Rashi. And yet, it could make sense because the way the Pasuk is written, the Hayaroa Techabatzon, Vunar Bnei Bila Bnei Bizal, She'aviv, the Dibatam Ra'ah, this is what how Greg read it at the very beginning. He was mechaving to the Ramban. Yeah, that is a very, very, very different reading, but perhaps it's a correct reading. So, I want to end off just with one last point. It seems very clear that you can spend hours going back and forth, and there's many, many more Mefarshim that discuss Behunar, but it is interesting to see both the Rashbam and the Ramban, how they depart from Rashi. The Rashbam, on the one hand, is saying that where is the point of departure? That the brothers were upset and jealous of the Bnei Bila and the Bnei Zilpah. And the Ramban says, no, it was the Bnei Bila and the Bnei Zilpah that were frustrated with Yosef. And as such, their reaction is, we cannot deal with him, we hate him. I just want to end off by trying to understand a teeny bit of the dynamic of where the Bnei Bilha found themselves in the Bnei Zilpah. So Nechama Price does share that if you take a look at the very last source, he brings five brothers with him and he puts them in front of Paro. So Rashi wants to know who, and everyone wants to know, who are these five brothers? So Rashi says they are Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yisachar, and Binyamin. They were the weakest, puniest of the brothers. Interesting that Shimon and Levi are on that list, right? Meaning like maybe they had like an adrenaline rush kind of moment, and that is how they were able to do it. But Reuven and Shimon and Levi themselves were not very strong. The Gemara, she quotes the Gemara in Baba Kama. I couldn't find it. It says that who are the five listed? Four of the five are the Bnei Hashvachot. All four of them. You know, four of them are there. Why? Because Yosef like discards and discredits them. That is a possibility. So this is what she suggests. She suggests that if you look carefully at the dynamic, the Bnei Hashvachot are always pushed to the side. By Esav, they're pushed to the front. Reuven, when he does whatever he does with Bilha, it calls her Bilha Shivchat Rachel. She's simply a maid. They're always, Yisachar, Zvulun, Dan, Naftali, Gad, Asher are always at the end of the bus. And it adds up. And at the end of the day, they just can't deal with it. And perhaps that's exactly where the Ramban is coming from. The Ramban is saying that they dealt with all the indignities that they had been dealt by their father, by their brothers. And then having to babysit for Yosef, they were like, enough, we're done. We're not willing to put up with it anymore. And when that happens, they lash out and they become the biggest players to start off in the hatred towards Yosef. Will they sell Yosef? No. Why? Not because they love him, right? But they don't have the guts to do something like that. That needs to be someone like Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, one that has real standing and real clout with the brothers. But from their perspective, they don't care for Yosef one bit. Quite a difference from Rashi. But it's certainly a very interesting way to take a look at things. All right. Thank you and have a wonderful Shabbos.